Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It would seem obvious that we are all becoming more than ever aware, with the Republican Party's blatant champion of male prerogative policies resuming its long-standing prejudicial inequality of women as a party political policy. The prevailing assumption among political Neanderthals continues to be that women, all women, are subservient to all men, who do indeed feel entitled to use their physical and social muscle to dominate women and crush them when they resist and rebel. Organizations to protect women from masculine malice have sprung up all over the USA, inspired not by official concern, but by women themselves. One such group was formed in Astoria, Oregon in 1979, known as the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service. Lee Ann Jones Kelly, who was the initial organizer, was asked to provide a personal history of its origins for its 25th anniversary in 2005. The following is excerpted from her account. Women in Crisis by Leanne Jones Kelly. The best and dearest friend I ever had was murdered by her husband in the late fall of 1977. Several months later, another friend was raped by an acquaintance. I was experiencing violence in my own marriage, and the news on national television was about an Oregon woman named Greta Rideout, who had charged her husband, John, with marital rape. The question on all the talk shows and local stations was, can a married woman be raped by her husband? I felt rage and powerlessness at the violence directed toward women and could not imagine that it could ever be different. I was watching a talk show on Portland TV with Jim Bosley and Margie Bouleau, I think that's her name. They were discussing this issue and interviewing a woman named Norma Joyce. She was the administrator of a place in Salem called the Women's Crisis Service. I had never heard of such a thing, and as soon as I could reach Ms. Joyce, I implored her to give me all the information about her program. She suggested that she come to Astoria and meet with me. We spent 2 days together, and she left me with several books, printouts, and a trainee. At about that time, I read that a small group of women professionals from Clatsop Community College had received a grant for a women's resource center and had rented a tiny office space. Within a day or two of meeting with Ms. Joyce, I went to the Women's Resource Center office to see what they had there. These women were into meditation, alternative healing, and feminist theory. They did not have anything there for rape or domestic violence. So I went home, got a typewriter, the books and materials that Ms. Joyce had left with me, and a telephone, and returned to the Women's Resource Center. I walked in and announced that I was there to provide services for women who were victims of violence. And how about I just use this desk right here? Can you imagine the gall? Whatever was I thinking? I was in a fever of righteous indignation about what I saw as a huge social injustice and with a fire in my belly to make it my life's work to right that wrong. Needless to say, I was not viewed as welcome as flowers in May. I seem to remember pointing out to the women there that the grant was for services to Clatsop County women, not just for only them and their friends, and they retreated to a far corner, whispering among themselves and looking at me with dark eyes. Sometime during the next few weeks, I realized that I was the only one left in the office and settled in for the duration. It never occurred to me that I was being pushy. Looking back, I cringe with embarrassment to recall how I must have appeared to everyone who came in touch with me in those months and years. I was a zealot and something like a force of nature not to be denied. I read every book, magazine, contacted every person, gleaned every drop of information I could about women and their lives in history, law, society, culture, church, home, and politics I could find. Every day I hungered for new information and knowledge. All that information put more fuel on my fire. I got a job at a nearby bar as a bartender to pay for the books and other supplies I needed and started spending all my time at the center. I brought my daughter Jody with me to Astoria from Napa. She attended school at Star of the Sea. I started pressuring the newspapers in Astoria, Seaside, and Cannon Beach to do features on domestic violence and rape and began advertising for volunteers for the Women's Crisis Service. The first group had 12 women. I applied for a nonprofit status 501(c)(3), and as soon as we received it, I applied for a grant for $1,200 to buy a machine which would answer our phone and transfer the caller to a third party. Nowadays, that service is a part of your telephone bill, but back then, it was real high tech and would enable us to have 24-hour coverage with people taking calls at their home. We got the grant and the phone, and suddenly we seemed real. We still did not have a board of directors, and I continued to be the bow of the ship, charting those choppy and suspicious waters where domestic violence still did not have any credibility or social recognition. I put together a big map of the area from St. Helens to Tillamook on the office wall. We started sticking pins with colored heads into places we had assisted, responded to, or received crisis calls from. Soon we saw clusters of red pins, blue pins, yellow pins. After 2 years, we had small forests of pins in each area of the map. This simple method formed the basis of numbers of women who had asked for services. We used the pins and the numbers they represented to apply for more grants. We used them to obtain statistics to lobby the Oregon legislature for laws prohibiting violence against women. We won every battle in those years and sponsored, lobbied for, and won not only our bills — the marriage license tax was the first of those bills — but also the first bill to protect elders from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. But that all came later. Over the next 2 years, Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service continued to recruit and train volunteers, many of whom were victims of domestic abuse, have fundraisers, do many public speaking engagements of from 2 to 100 people, anybody who would listen, respond to police calls about battered women, frantic calls from women running away from abusive situations, all the while fending off heavy criticism from the religious right and angry husbands who claimed that we were the cause of decline in family and the American way of life. Also during that time, the crisis service became a very savvy board of directors, writing and winning a proposal to bring VISTA volunteers to each region to help organize on the ground. This was the very first VISTA grant of its kind, and it served as a pilot for other states. Several of us who had been taking other jobs to support our programs got VISTA positions. I was one of the lucky ones. Along about the second year, I was able to write a grant and get a part-time director. I am sure that I did a good thing then, a thing of my heart. I am also sure that there are those who will remember me as a real pain in the behind. Perhaps if one charges into the battle, there are those who will follow, those who will watch, and those who will try to shoot you down. I hope that the spirit of social justice, fairness, and support of our sisters is still alive and well in River City. And that was by Leanne Jones Kelly, Women in Crisis. And now, the crisis service is called the Harbor in Astoria, and it is located at 801 Commercial Astoria. The phone number is 503-325-3426. It is open 9 to 5 weekdays. This number is also the emergency crisis number. Again, 503-325-3426. And now, something I wrote about the Clatsop County Crisis Service, its first year, which was also the first year of my newspaper, the North Coast Times-Eagle, beating her up. And a quote by Arthur Honeyman from one of his poems. Bravely, she confides her victory over despair due to brutish acts inflicted on her body and soul. Ah, how golden is the triumph of the spirit of splendid survival. The woman had been beaten by her husband. He raped her also, then tore up the house. Now he was in jail, and she was afraid of what he would do to her when he was released. She called the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service in Astoria. She was told that a man had no legal right to hurt his wife and that she could press charges against him. There were other problems. Her husband's parents had the children and refused to give them up to her. She was also addicted to Valium. That night, she called the crisis service a second time and asked if anyone would take her to a hospital. She had attempted suicide with an overdose of Valium, preceded by heavy drinking of alcohol. She was afraid her husband would kill her if she attempted to keep him in jail, she told the woman from the crisis service, who drove her to the emergency room. The woman from the crisis service said she would accompany her to the police station. She said it was important to fight back against her husband's brutality. She knew firsthand about domestic violence, the crisis service woman said. She had herself been a battered wife. Most of the women who volunteer for the crisis service have been victims of domestic violence. Like a majority of the women they attempt to help, it was initially difficult to break off with the men who beat them. Like the woman who attempted suicide, they were afraid of their husbands or lovers. They understood when callers continued to stay with the men who beat them. Some have called more than once. The woman who overdosed on Valium was too frightened to press charges against her husband. After assuring her that she was safe from her husband, the police released him just before she signed a statement that would have kept him in jail. Big, the woman from the crisis service said. I shrank in the corner. He looked just like the guy who used to beat me up. The frightened wife left the police station with her husband. The woman from the crisis service thinks he moved her out of town. A typical case, she said. A woman held hostage, her children the weapon used to imprison her. If she did not break away from the pattern of violence and pain, her next attempt at suicide might succeed, or she might die from drug addiction. It was not unlikely that she would be killed by her husband. The crisis service was established in October 1979 to help break the pattern. Most of what the women who volunteer do is provide referral services, such as medical and legal help. They also set up sanctuaries when needed. They are often at risk. Some have been threatened by husbands or lovers of women they assist. They are severely criticized by men who are alarmed by the feminist movement and the growing determination of women to protect themselves at a time when the violence against them has increased. Each call received by the crisis service is logged. The information is confidential, and the daily reports do not identify the callers. Here are some examples picked at random and scrambled somewhat to protect the identities of the victims. Woman taken to hospital, badly beaten by husband of 5 months. Battered wife moved out of home and needs shelter where he cannot find her. Woman needs shelter, harassed by ex-husband, bringing children with her. Woman on the run, talked fast, will arrive for shelter in 1 hour, afraid of husband. Niece called, uncle threatening her aunt. Husband charged with kidnapping, tried to take children. Woman with 4 kids. Husband beat her severely, threatened her and kids with gun. Police called, took gun and husband. Woman asking for shelter if she decides to leave. Boyfriend of rape victim asks what he can do to help her. She is withdrawn, unable to respond physically. He wants some reading material on rape. Woman married 9 months, husband an alcoholic. She lost first husband and oldest daughter in a fire several years ago. Younger children ordered to in-laws by court. Present alcoholic husband shouts at her after drinking every night. She is very nervous, needs company. Husband brandished gun at wife and girlfriend. He took kids and left. She wants to file assault charges. Wants names of attorneys. Woman called in regard to 13-year-old daughter who is having problems after a short stay with dad, who lives in another city. Woman says husband's father a drinker and batterer. Woman's boyfriend tried to strangle her. She also has head injuries. Woman beaten by husband, put in shelter. Woman afraid of motorcycle club, wants shelter. Woman choked by husband, held her on bed, threatened her with gun. Woman's husband jealous of her job and friends, poured gas all over bedroom, himself and wife, threatened to burn. Unemployed husband tries to kill wife, shot arrows at her. Woman trapped at home in terror for several days. Husband slaps her, spits and urinates on her, pulls her hair and threatens to kill her. Woman forced into sex, put in shelter. The list of abuse seems unending. More women are assaulted by men, and the more women attempt to defend themselves, the more brutal are the men who assault them. The times do not favor gentleness. The hardening of the nation makes life more dangerous for women. The women of the Clatsop County Crisis Service struggle along, often disillusioned, often in despair. The calls come in. And that was something I wrote, beating her up. And now, You Are Not Alone, by Karen Malin. If I were granted the power to eliminate all the violence done by women to men and children, would there still be violence in the world? Yes, indeed. If I could eliminate all the violence done by men to women and children, would there still be violence in the world? Yes, probably. But this thought calms me more than the previous question. If men were held accountable for acts of violence, neither individual or systemic acts of violence would be socially tolerated. And that's by Margaret Frimuth. Margaret Frimuth is the director of VOCA, Victory Over Child Abuse Camp. For information, call 503-325-2761. Domestic violence sounds like an oxymoron, the juxtaposition of two absolute opposites that contradict each other in a joining that startles the mind. Home ought to be a safe place, but it isn't. The words domestic violence, so unsuitable to each other, indicate a schizophrenic condition that is pervasive in our culture. However, we are not alone. Domestic violence is an integral part of most cultures that reside on Mother Earth, our home. It affects us all, every one of us. Whether we talk about it or keep it hidden, our shared experience binds us in one universal wish. We don't like it one bit, and we want to see it eliminated. No small task. Eliminating violence from our society is the major goal of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence and the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. These coalitions provide assistance to programs that serve victims of domestic and sexual violence, such as the Clatsop County Women's Resource Center, formerly the Clatsop County Crisis Service, and now the Harbor. That's in parentheses. Their purpose is to change societal conditions that cause violence to exist. Awareness of the problem is the first step in dealing with the cure. Violence against women won't subside until public attitudes change. A sense of entitlement is a major cause of violence against women and children by men. Many males believe they have the right to get what they want from women, even if it includes rape, torture, mutilation, sexual slavery, incestuous and extrafamilial child sexual abuse, physical and emotional battery, deprivation, sexual harassment, genital mutilations, unnecessary gynecological operations, forced motherhood, forced heterosexuality, forced sterilization, psychosurgery, abuse of medical examination, cosmetic surgery, and other mutilations in the name of beautification. Jane Caputi and Diana E. H. Russell coined a new word in a Ms. magazine article that best describes this gruesome list of violent behaviors against women. They call it femicide, which is sexist terrorism motivated by hatred, contempt, pleasure, or a sense of ownership of women. It happens all the time. It is estimated that a woman is battered every 15 seconds in America. It is the single largest cause of injury to women. These figures are from the U.S. Department of Justice, which reports that more than one-third of women homicide victims over 15 are killed by a male spouse or boyfriend. The Journal of the American Medical Association states that in 50% of families where the wife is being abused, the children of that family are also abused. Until recently, law enforcement and judicial systems have viewed spousal abuse as a private matter and have been hesitant to intervene or treat domestic assault as a crime. Violent crimes against women have escalated in recent decades, say authors Caputi and Russell. We see this escalation of violence against females as part of a backlash against feminism. This doesn't mean it's the feminism. Patriarchal culture terrorizes women whether we fight back or not. Still, when male supremacy is challenged, that terror is intensified. Women who stepped out of line in early modern Europe were tortured and killed as witches. Estimates range from 200,000 to 9 million killed. Today, such women are regarded as deserving whatever happens to them. The Statement of Philosophy of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence recognizes that the root causes of this violence stems from a belief in the supremacy of one sex over the other that is legitimized by a complex series of institutional and social arrangements that define and treat women as subordinates. It is painful for most women to think about men's violence against us as individuals and collectively because the violence we encounter and the disbelief and contempt with which we are met with when we do speak out is so often so traumatic and life-threatening that many of us engage in denial or repression of our experiences, state Caputi and Russell. However, we must demand an end to the global patriarchal war on women, quote unquote. All women have the right to freedom from violation and their own self-determination. We must all collectively and internationally take on the task of formulating strategies of resistance to the massive and formidable horrors that confront women and children everywhere. We must eliminate violence from our lives. And that was by Karen Malin, You Are Not Alone. She was director of the Clatsop County Crisis Service for 7 years. She wrote this article for the North Coast Times Eagle. She afterward was elected to the Astoria City Council. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk is engineer of this program. My mother Josephine's 50th birthday, October 27, 1962, was a day old Mother Earth was nearly murdered by her children. That was the pinnacle night of the infamous Cuban Missile Crisis, when both the USA and USSR had lost control of their head-on confrontation, and all that left was pushing their mutual doomsday buttons on this quarrelsome hair-trigger world. It all started when Russian nuclear missiles were discovered being installed in Castro-led Cuba a week earlier, on my younger brother's 19th birthday, October 22nd, which might be considered the start of the crisis. It was the worst moment of the half-century Cold War between the two nuclear titans. It is now suggested that the planet and our species were not as close to obliteration as the participants feared. The American myth is that the Soviets backed down from the brink of extinction. Much closer to the truth is that the political leadership of both nations cut an 11th-hour deal because the military systems of both nations were moving inexorably toward confrontation. It has been 115 years since the British four-masted sailing ship Peter Iredale was hurled onto Clatsop Beach on the Oregon north coast, where it has remained stuck in the surf and sand like an extinct beast in a tar pit. The Iredale was making for the Columbia River when it was driven ashore in a storm near Fort Stevens in the early morning darkness of October 25, 1906. A century plus a decade and a half of wind and water, in consort with salt and sand, have rotted Peter Iredale to rusted iron bones resembling a desert skeleton. Its surf-sized skeletal sculpture acts as a museum to the vanished era of windships and also as a symbol for the hundreds of vessels, sail, steam, and diesel, and crews that have perished in the waters around the infamous Columbia River Bar, known as the Graveyard of the Pacific. Happy birthday today to Jesse Duncan, wherever you are. And again, happy natal day today to Diane Kamali. And happy birthday to my brother, William Copeland McCusker II, tomorrow, nicknamed II for the two Roman numerals after his name.